Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Big news day, as I'm sure you can tell. We're gonna be talking about some of the biggest news of the day, including the Supreme Court finally weighing in sort of on what's going on in Texas, as well as the flooding in the East Coast. But today is Thursday, and so you enter this day not knowing who is going to be my co-host. Well, we've got a treat for you. For the first time ever, Jackson White co-hosting. Jackson, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me, man. It's always good to just, you know, chop it up with you about all types of stuff. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, we're very glad to have you on. Now, you've been on the show before talking about Politiscope. But if people are not familiar with the work that you do for Politiscope, tell us a little bit about it.
Oh yeah, Politiscope's a platform where we help people understand what different bills that have been passed or that are up on the floor of Congress mean, how it'll affect them, who voted for and against it, help you keep up with campaigns. We focus our news sources on policy. So it's pretty much just a platform to help you educate yourself and take action with a variety of different features. We got some new things coming out soon, and pretty much we're just all about facts and helping people to disseminate through all the garbage that's going on all over the place. So great. Downloaded this on iOS and Android.
That's awesome. Can I ask you a question? Because I just have my gut feeling, but you actually work in this area. It feels like less bills are being considered and passed. Is there any reason to believe that, or am I just following my gut in the wrong direction?
No, your gut's absolutely correct. There's really not been too much activity. And part of what we cover, again, like you said, is legislation. But, especially just with the growing polarization and too, like the early focus when Biden first came in on COVID and really dealing with that, and a lot of things that are more executive decisions like Afghanistan and things like that, that's really been what's mostly been taken up Biden's administration so far. But your gut's absolutely correct.
Awesome. Well, we're very glad to have you here, and we certainly have a lot to talk about on this episode of the show. Thank you everybody for watching, regardless of what platform you're on. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream so that people know we're live, that would be great. And if you want to send us tweets, comments, super chats, stuff like that, we'll respond during our breaks. But with all that said, Jackson, you ready to jump into some news?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, hold on your butts because the weather's about to get rough. Let's jump into this video. That footage you were just seeing is taken from the teaser trailer for the reboot of The Day After Tomorrow. I'm joking. No, that's New York right now, just about 1 month after another horrendous bout of flooding. Horrible, horrible weather has taken over the East Coast as Ida continues across the country. Now, we're very lucky that Jackson, our co-host today, is actually right in the thick of things. So can you tell us a little bit about what the past bit's been like?
Yeah, well, I'm here in North Jersey. So, people up in the city and more in South Jersey along the coast really got it a lot worse. But even here, power's out, the gas has been knocked out. A lot of people I know who were just trying to travel back from the city ended up getting stuck on the highways. And what I think is really interesting about this is, as we've been going back and forth with infrastructure arguments for quite some time, I think this is a beautiful example of why we're not taking it seriously enough, and how really the conversation really in and of itself just isn't substantial about not wanting to spend $3.5 trillion, Kyrsten Sinema and Manchin and all that back and forth. This is exactly why we need better infrastructure, because this is happening all over the country. But again, even where I'm at, it's just been a big mess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And it's been not only historic, that's what they're saying, historic flooding. It's also been deadly. Eight reported dead so far. As always, we can only hope that that's the extent of it, but we fear that it could end up being worse. The first ever flash flood emergency warnings for New York City being issued. And so Jackson's 100% right. We are going to have this stupid conversation about $3.5 trillion being too expensive What is it going to cost when New York's subway system is completely destroyed by the flooding that it already can't handle? And it's only going to get worse every year from here on out. Mm-hmm. Now have that same story for Amtrak and for roads and for bridges and for homes along every waterway in the country. That is going to be incredibly expensive. And I would argue we can't afford that. But as of right now, we had a 50-year-old man reported dead, a 48-year-old woman, a 2-year-old boy found unconscious and unresponsive late yesterday inside a home, pronounced dead. One death was confirmed in New Jersey as well. And look, I want to jump ahead to, we have this flood hazard mapper. And if we could bring this up, it's from the New York City Department of City Planning. Jackson, I don't know if you remember back in Inconvenient Truth, they would do these map visualizations of different cities along the coast, and they would show, here's what it looks like now, and here's what it's gonna look like when the oceans rise. Mm-hmm. This isn't the exact same thing, but it sure makes me feel, it makes me think about that as we're, you know, experiencing this flooding.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, again, it's not just, as you mentioned, the cost in dollars, but the cost in lives as this really explodes out of control. You know, where are people gonna go when it's too hot for them to even drink water in places, when wars are waged over the access to that water? And this is a lot closer than we believe. And again, every single year, I'm 29 years old, and in my lifetime, I've seen just climate drastically get worse every single year in a variety of ways. I remember Katrina all the way until now. And you know, unfortunately, as the problem just stacks and compounds upon itself, that's making it more expensive, and it's making it more of a challenge, and it's making it more of a hurdle to jump over. And so, you know, those maps, like you would point, like you just had on the screen, and pointing out an Inconvenient Truth, it's all coming true in a very short amount of time. And yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that we just have so many roadblocks in place to give the will of the people a chance.
100%, and you know, far too few elected officials actually talking about this. We're gonna turn to one who is, but to the team, feel free to put up some of that B-roll, because you know, I'm originally from Bridgeport, Connecticut, but it's been a while since I've lived on the East Coast. But I spent a good amount of time in New York. Every video that was coming up on my Twitter feed looked like the end of the world. Like, that is not what streets in Manhattan are supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. Flooded so that cars are floating, subway stations being flooded. And by the way, it reminds me, we just showed like a month ago, I believe it was in China, they had an experience of their subway flooding. Well, now it's here. Now it's everywhere, because the parts of the earth that aren't on fire are flooding. That is basically our reality. And I want to give brief credit to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who of course is one of those in DC who's been taking this most seriously, but with so far little success, saying, experiencing all this flooding in New York City right now and thinking about all the politicians who told me that pursuing a Green New Deal to adapt our national infrastructure to climate change is unrealistic and too expensive, as if doing too little is the responsible adult thing to do.
Sweeping under the rug, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we do. Sweep it under the rug until the rug's floating above our heads.
Exactly. And yeah, we're trying to hold on to the rug.
Right, right. So,
yeah. And by the way, she also pointed out one thing. One of the videos that was really going viral on Twitter was of a Grubhub delivery being done via bike. And she tweeted, please do not be the person who orders delivery during a flash flood that the NWS has deemed a dangerous and life-threatening situation. It puts vulnerable people at risk. If it's too dangerous for you, it's too dangerous for them. Raid your cabinets or ask a neighbor to help.
Eat the beans.
Exactly. Like, you know, you've got cans of vegetables that have been there for 6 months. You should probably get around to those at some point. Because if not now, when? Honestly.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, like, I hope that the damage that's been done won't get any worse. I'm seeing now, I'm learning via our lower third that the death toll is up to 14 right now. Just devastating, people left without electricity. Geez, state of emergency for the state. Jackson.
And after all the money, and two to consider, I just thought, after all the money that's been spent in COVID response, you know, like it's just for all the arguments again about fiscal responsibility. In what way is it responsible to not have anything prepared for any types of potential damages? And not just potential damages, but predictable routine damages. You know, things that we know are coming, and you know, just so that an extra house on the lake can be bought. I mean, that's really what it all boils down to when it comes down to the people who make these final decisions, who have the final say. So it just boils down to their personal greed, because there's no other logic in it.
I agree. And look, if you're a rich person listening to this, I would heed Jackson's words very specifically. Put your beach house on a lake, not on the ocean, because it's just gonna get destroyed because of your callous, selfish view of the world. Anyway, we'll see as this develops. Again, it's every day there's some disaster. I'm not even showing you another fire tornado video I saw going around, because those are things that happen all the time now. But you know, obviously thinking about the people of the Northeast as the West is still on fire and all of this, just devastating.
We live in through revelation, man.
That's it feels like that.
Yeah, we live in through revelation. Jackson,
why, like, you know, if climate change was just hypothetical, it's just in the future, or maybe it was really subtle, like people are dying, but it's hard to know exactly who and exactly when. I could almost get people not doing anything, but I feel like we constantly have in our shoved in our face reminders of how bad this already is, and even that doesn't seem to do anything. Not just abstractly at any point in the political cycle, but like while we're considering an infrastructure bill, we still have no idea if they're going to take climate change seriously in it, as we're pounded by fire after tornado, after storm, after flooding, and it doesn't seem to do anything. If not that, what will?
Personal things getting compounding, you know, like, I mean, I think that there is definitely a breaking point, just because survival is a part of life. It's built into every living thing. At the end of the day, we're built to push for our survival. But unfortunately, there's still enough people in enough areas that aren't suffering quite bad just yet for there to be really an alarm about let's really do something. You know, people who may be more in middle America, not that there aren't catastrophes there, but who are looking at this as a coastal problem. You know, these are the coastal elites. Or even if they're not maybe political in that way, this isn't my problem. And you know, it's just, other than that, I don't really know what else could be, except if there's enough people impacted. I mean, imagine if COVID was like as deadly as and widespread as Ebola is, like how Ebola really, if COVID as quickly as it spread, if Ebola spread like that, we would have millions of people dead. Yeah. Instead of a million, which is, you know, almost a million, which is still unacceptable and ridiculous. But maybe it would take something that catastrophic to where, you know, half or a quarter of the country is suffering. Yeah. Unfortunately, maybe. Yeah. And there's so much escape that we can go through online and social media and stuff. So
that is definitely true. That is definitely true. Well, look, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, Jackson and I will be talking about other news, including his recent trip to the Texas Youth Summit. It's really something. So we're gonna show some video from that after this. Okay, everybody, let's jump back into it and see what we can learn about the opposition. So recently there was the Texas Youth Summit, which we talked a little bit about on the show, but of course I wasn't there. I don't necessarily envy anyone who was, but we do have someone who was there. So Jackson, you went to the Texas Youth Summit and you had an experience there. Tell me, how did you decide to go to this event?
Well, really, I just had the opportunity to do it, and I thought that it would be a good chance to kind of just show what real people are thinking in different areas. And you know, my approach was just, you know, I was just there to be, I was cordial, I was cool with everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't there to cause any trouble. And there were some people who were genuinely nice people. They maybe just see things in a different type of way, or at least on a surface level. And then there were some people who were, you know, you could kind of just get a certain vibe from them. Yeah. And we actually ended up getting permanently banned from the MEMS Baptist Church.
You're because banned for life from a church.
Yeah, banned for life from the MEMS Baptist Church, because Jesus does not want us there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, they're speaking for Jesus. But, okay. Well, you'll need to repent, clearly. Yes. No, but like you, I'm glad that it was you doing this, because I think everyone watching can agree. You give off a very calm, measured vibe. You're not gonna get in people's face and shake them or anything.
You went there
wanting to actually learn. So let's get into a little bit of what you found. So I think in this first video, you're asking people about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Let's see what you got.
Do you think that Biden should be impeached for the way that we withdrew?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think he should, along with, you know, Nancy and Harris. And I mean, it's punishable, could be by death. And I think, like, if not, there should be absolute jail sentence time.
I think Joe Biden should be impeached. Personally, I hate him.
Yeah.
I hate him with a passion. Definitely disagree with everything about the liberal left side. I disagree with all their values. I disagree with all Joe Biden and Kamala Harris values. Like I said, I hate them. In the end, they're all bad and sinful people, and they're not right in the head.
Okay, tell us about that. Was that representative of basically the vibe at the summit?
For the most part, but like, people were happy to be there, you have to keep in mind, because, you know, it's a group thing. People are coming together under a common purpose and a common cause, and something that makes them feel that human connectedness that we can't escape our desire for. Mm-hmm. So it's a real thing. It's not just like people who have these ideas, it's an actual community of people. And so, you know, one of the interesting things, like, you know, you didn't see, you know, those were edited clips, but a lot of the feedback that you get when you probe them, like, you know, what do you really think about that? Or when, you know, what type, you know, for I hate Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. You know, well, outside of his administration, what throughout his political career do you not disagree with that he's done? And they'll just say stuff like, everything, none of it. I don't agree with any of it. You know, or like, you'll ask them questions, and then when you ask them to kind of explain and elaborate a bit deeper, there's really not much there. And
yeah.
So, you know, again, that's hard to combat against, because, you know, we talk a lot about, I know you talk a lot about algorithms in different shows that you do, and people can see what they're drawn to, not necessarily what they're looking for. So that really kind of grows that community, because, you know, this was just north of Houston in Conroe, Texas. So, you know, it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, and look, you are trying to hear them out. You're being very calm about it. You remind me of, we used to have Emma Vigeland at the network, would go to Trump rallies and talk to them. And like, she was good because she has a poker face. I think you have a good poker face. But the issue is, like, she hates him. You hate Joe Biden. Like, I'm a leftist. Joe Biden's not my guy. But you hate him? Like, I could devil's advocate. I could come up with some reasons theoretically to hate him. I don't think they're the ones she's thinking of. Like, he deserves the death penalty for withdrawing from Afghanistan.
I was just thinking of that. Like, that's really? Like, really? Like,
really? So what, for withdrawing along the plan that Trump wanted to do? Or, oh no, probably not that. Probably that there was the terror attack that killed 13 soldiers. That was a devastating tragedy. Okay, so should every president who's been executed who has soldiers die? Because Trump had like 60 soldiers die in Afghanistan alone while he was president. So he'd be killed like five times over then, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense, Jackson.
And what was interesting too, the woman who said it may be punishable by death, she was actually a real, like, just cheerful, like, general good energy. But obviously, it's just when you really dig down, you know what I mean? Like, that's when all that stuff really comes to surface. And, you know, if I was to go up there and be real challenging, you know what I mean, then it definitely wouldn't have gone over well. But again, she was really nice. She was happy to talk to me. You know what I mean? And it's just, but
The people you talked to, did they, because you mentioned that when you tried to dig deeper for details, they didn't really have any. So this is a youth summit at a church. Did they seem like very politically driven people, or were they there for the religion side of things?
Well, all of them seemed to be politically driven, and there were people that I talked to who had a bit more like traditional Republican points about like regulations and, you know, actually pretty much no one there was against leaving Afghanistan. It's just like all the things and how we did it and stuff like that. And there were people there who talked a lot about like people whose opinions were like, we have to put God back into everything and God's been taken out of everything. And interestingly too, one of the women, you know, she was like, I was like, you know, well, what about people who may adhere to other religions or who may think of God in other types of ways? And she said, well, it all kind of all boils down to the same thing. But what matters is that you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. You know what I mean? So there's just that, it's that closed-mindedness. And but yeah, they were all very politicized for sure.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it almost sounded like she was really onto something. Mm-hmm. And then not so much.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have one other video, so let's jump into this.
Yeah. Right, so just, hey guys, I hate to break in here. Y'all have permission to be here on the property?
We do not.
Okay, y'all need to go to those by the road. You can't be anywhere on this property.
Y'all have a good one.
Y'all come back onto the property, y'all will be arrested for criminal trespass.
All right.
Okay, y'all haven't asked for permission or anything. Halfway the ditch to the road, you're good. Anything halfway from the ditch this way, it's criminal trespass.
All right.
Okay, so you were being thrown out. They're kicking you out. So were they right to be kicking you out there? Was it criminal trespassing?
No, I mean, it was a public event. So we had technically the right to be there. But I think they just, I mean, I'm a 6'6" guy with dreads and I'm not white. You know what I'm saying? So like that's pretty attention drawn. And actually, after that, we came back and when they banned us, because we were just trying to get some clarity, like, well, let's, you know, get maybe people a little bit further away from the doors. But yeah, he ended up getting the police involved, and that could have went bad, but it ended up being fine. But he found out we were with TYT, and then he felt a certain type of way about that. So
I think he was worried about what would be said, but of course you're just asking questions. They're the ones saying things that might get people in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyway, more of this is available for people to watch, right?
Yeah. It's on. There's a bit more coming out, but there's clips on the main TYT channel, Rebel HQ, talking about it. You saw a little bit of the Afghanistan withdrawal, people's opinions on Biden being impeached or not, a bit of their religious views, stuff like that.
Awesome. Yeah, everybody should definitely go and subscribe to Rebel HQ. We got great contributors there. You can see more of the footage. More power to you to giving them a chance, hearing them out. Especially in Texas. It's rough times in Texas, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, it went well.
Okay, so why don't we move into our next topic? Little bit of a thematic link here. We'll see how it goes. We're still dealing with the fallout from the rally in DC on January 6th that resulted in the storming of the Capitol building. And it turns out we're now also just a couple of weeks away from a potential double dip into that territory. Apparently on September 18th, far right extremist groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers are planning to attend a rally in the US Capitol that's designed to demand justice for the hundreds of people who've been charged in connection with the January insurrection. No words yet on when the rally will be held to demand justice for those who will be arrested for what they do on September 18th. We'll have that information for you in the future, I guess. But anyway, people have been talking to federal officials about this event, and we know that hopefully this time around they're going to be taking it seriously security-wise, with the Capitol Police saying the department was closely monitoring September 18th and planning accordingly, and the Metropolitan Police Department is activating its entire force for that day and has put specialized riot officers on standby, according to law enforcement officials. So, Jackson, obviously, you know, the 6th was brutal. There was 1,000 assaults on federal officials, according to body cam footage. And the hope is that the security will be a little bit more prepared for this time. Do you think that that's likely?
Probably not. I mean, I think that this is still an issue overall that generally isn't taken seriously because of the type of people who are in the Proud Boys. They're kind of just like average everyday people who in general, like they maybe aren't on big criminal radars. you know, these are just kind of people who are upset, who view life in a way where maybe they're victims of other people's success or access. So they're still overall not really taken seriously. They're still looked at kind of like as just a bunch of goofy guys who maybe cause a bit of ruckus. And if they were maybe a bit more effectively organized, then people may take them more seriously. But I think there's still, and there's so much going on in the country. You know what I mean? I think that this is still kind of something that people who aren't really involved in politics may not even know who the Proud Boys are.
Sure. Yeah, maybe. Although, you know, like depending on the area, like if you live in Portland, obviously you've been dealing in LA too. Like they're sending their people to attack people, to glom onto other causes and start violence. So that's the concern. I want to give you a little bit of information from Frank Figliuzzi, former assistant director for counterintelligence at the FBI, talking about the concerns about the 18th in this video.
Well, my contacts in federal law enforcement, Ali, tell me that they are all over this. This has certainly got their attention, in large part because the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers reportedly are expressing interest in showing up. This has this rally has obtained a permit. The numbers are expected to be large. FBI, DHS, Capitol Police, Washington Metropolitan Police, all making arrangements, including some police departments not allowing any leave, calling in all officers for the day. You mentioned the discussion of putting the fence back up. Here's what's energized some of the potentially bad or violent actors here. The preparations are going to be there. The security will be tight. One of the concerns I have is, will the security be so tight that there will be soft targets perceived around the rest of the country where some violence could play out? That's why DHS last Friday reportedly briefed federal law enforcement executives across the country regarding what they're seeing and the need to be vigilant, particularly in the lead up to September 18th.
So the concern there that what's happening in DC is going to be the most high profile protest, but it will also be the best secured one, ideally, hopefully. And that might mean that Proud Boys in other cities might commit acts of violence. To be fair, I heard similar things about the 6th and some of the protests that happened right after the 6th. And not to say that there wasn't any violence, but there was nothing on the scale of the 6th. So hopefully they're just being overprepared, Jackson, and we don't have to worry about Sacramento being attacked and other things like that. It seems like they're taking it seriously, but you know, I don't want people to rest on their laurels, I guess I'll just say.
Well, even if they just have, you know, halfway of a decent set of police officers ready and just agents wherever, they should be able to get it. Because like with the 6th, those are people from all over the country. You know, some Trump supporters, hard right Republicans who weren't necessarily parts of the Proud Boys. You know, they came from a variety of different backgrounds. This is more specifically the Proud Boys, so it should be easier to keep track of, and it should be easier to handle. So if they're halfway serious, then they should get it, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and also the Oath Keepers, who at least ostensibly are former members of the armed forces. And we know on the 6th, there was a number of people who'd been in the military that had served in police departments or were currently serving in police departments. That's part of the fear, but it's also likely that our intelligence agencies do have plants inside of these organizations. Hopefully they'll provide good information. I just want to throw out one or two other things in advance of the 18th, which of course we'll be covering. One is that one of the concerns that came out of the 6th was, you remember those pipe bombs that were placed? They never, as far as they know, they never caught the person that planted those pipe bombs. And so these were explosive devices that were placed outside the headquarters of both the Republican and Democratic National Committees on January 5th, the night before the riot. They weren't found until the 6th, but they were placed the night before. It's possible that someone who was arrested did plant those, and we just don't know. But as of right now, Jackson, somebody planted bombs and they could still be hanging around. They could show up at the 6th or at the 18th. Even if they're not involved, the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers, they could just use it as an opportunity to try again what they tried on the 6th. So that's sort of my fear, that this might attract other people not affiliated with the groups that might commit acts of violence.
Exactly. And again, those are the people who really would slip under the radar. Because if, you know, again, this is specifically a Proud Boys response, so it opens up the opportunities for just a regular guy who may have ill will toward the establishment and or what have you in a variety of ways, and who, you know, would practically get ignored and until after the fact. So
exactly. Yeah, now I want to point out one other difference between this and the Six, at least as of right now, is the Six had very high profile Republican speakers at it, helping to organize it and speaking at the event. So, like, you know, people like Ron Johnson and Donald Trump himself and Rudy Giuliani and all of that. In this case, supposedly not so much. According to the Daily Beast, they've been talking to a number of people that were in Trump's orbit. Two people familiar with the matter say they aren't aware of former President Trump even receiving an invitation to come to this demonstration. I hope that he does not. To be fair, the event's organizer is Matt Brainard, who used to be the acting director of data and strategy during the early months of Trump's first presidential campaign, but he was fired after just 5 months. So far, there doesn't seem to be much of a connection with Trump's actual circle, which I think is a good thing, because it seems like less likely to draw a bigger crowd and a more violent crowd if they don't believe that they have like the official like thumbs up of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts about this, Jackson?
I think that hopefully, you know, my last thoughts really are, you know, obviously, hopefully that they take this seriously. But I think it's important to notice that stuff like this is going to continue. You know, just because the growing sentiments in the country, the economic realities that we face. You know, I mean, I just moved to a new apartment, and the apartment I was in is now $200 more expensive than it was the last year. And people aren't making any more money. So small things like that, that you may not think are directly related to people's political actions, are directly related to it, as people are continuing to be dissatisfied with, you know, what they see as politicians not delivering, or literally not delivering. So, you know, we need to buckle up and stay ready.
Yeah, that is a great point, because that sort of thing, like the housing, let alone all the other issues, are definitely out there. And you have, you know, you have some politicians like AOC and other members of the squad that are like, okay, here are the problems, let's fix those problems. And then you have another side, people like Tucker Carlson, the right wing populists, that are like, oh, I see those problems. Now I can turn you to crazy, you know, to crazy ends. Not actually addressing the problems, not trying to solve the problems, but using your frustration to send you out to attack Afghan refugees and things like that. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take our second break, but when we come back from this, we will be talking about the update on what's going on in Texas. And then we have other news besides, so we'll see you in just a few. Okay, so before we jump back into the news, and we do have some important news to get to, I do want to let you know about a few things that are coming up soon, including that on as soon as we're done here on the Damage Report, Indisputable is coming up with Dr. Rashad Ritchie and Ben Carollo, some galaxy brain.
I'll be on there tomorrow as well.
Oh, nice.
Indisputable. Yeah, I'll be on with Dr. Ritchie,
That's awesome. So two great episodes of Indisputable to look forward to. Ben Q will be up as well for a debate, so stay tuned for that. Also, this Friday, the first episode of Game Busters coming. So you got Jordan Yule, you got Brett Ehrlich every Friday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 a.m. Pacific Time. So that is right after the bonus episode, twitch.tv/TYT. You can be a part of the show, you can sabotage their games, you can make them look like fools. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that you do as well. And also, today's Thursday, so you know that you also have reactions to look forward to on Twitch, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Ravana is going to be doing reactions, so you got that to look forward to as well. And with that, why don't we jump back into the news? So following up from the Supreme Court's lack of involvement in what was going on in Texas, that was bad enough, because that meant that SB 8, which not only criminalizes abortion after 8 weeks, but also deputizes basically anyone across the country who wants to become a bounty hunter and track down those who helped make an abortion happen and get paid $10,000 for it, could stand. Now it's worse, because the Supreme Court has gotten involved and they're still letting it stand. So there was a vote, 5-4, with Chief Justice John Roberts joining the court's three liberal members in dissent. Isn't that weird? Like all the all the Supreme Court justices that Trump put on the court just decided to let it stand. It's so weird.
Yeah, funny how that works, right?
Yeah, Jackson, yeah. I heard that Kavanaugh wouldn't do this, you know, like, and Amy Coney Barrett, she's not some kind of religious zealot who's gonna try to get rid of Roe v. Wade. Whoops, weird. Oh. Anyway, let's give you the specifics though, because there is a little bit of nuance to this. The Supreme Court has gotten involved, but it is possible that this will not be the last time they get involved. So what actually happened? The majority opinion was unsigned and consisted of a single long paragraph. I mean, why put a whole bunch of time into it? It's only millions of people's reproductive rights. It said the abortion providers who had challenged the law in an emergency application to the court had not made their case in the face of, quote, complex and novel procedural questions. The majority stressed that it was not ruling on the constitutionality of the Texas law and did not mean to limit procedurally proper challenges to it. So apparently these people just weren't being proper enough. But anyway, what does that mean? Well, we're gonna give you a little bit of some of the dissents, which there were several. So Sonia Sotomayor said the court's order is stunning. Presented with an application to enjoin a flagrantly unconstitutional law engineered to prohibit women from exercising their constitutional rights and evade judicial scrutiny, a majority of justices have opted to bury their heads in the sand, which is it's a great image and it's exactly what they're doing. She goes on to say the court has rewarded the state's effort to delay federal review of a plainly unconstitutional statute enacted in disregard of the court's precedents through procedural entanglements of the state's own creation. The court should not be so content to ignore its constitutional obligations to protect not only the rights of women, but also the sanctity of its precedents and of the rule of law. So what does all this mean? It means that what Texas did, which is so underhanded and kind of cowardly, but also it's like, you know, clever, I guess, is they're not saying abortion's illegal at 6 weeks, and if you get one, we're coming for you, or we're coming for your doctor, or anything like that. Because that clearly is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court has been very clear about that. And maybe, although not necessarily, even this Supreme Court wouldn't allow it. What they're saying is, we're not coming for you. Other people are coming for you. We're not a part of it. So you can't challenge us in court, which is how normally these sorts of things are challenged. That's the novel procedure of it. And everyone knows exactly what Texas is doing here. Everybody knows, and they know more importantly what the effect of this strategy is. The Supreme Court is playing dumb, saying, you know, we need time to figure this out and all this. So, and even though they could have that time to rule on the constitutionality while temporarily blocking the order so that women have their rights, they're just like, well, we'll think about it. And we'll let it stand while we do that. Jackson, it is so underhanded. Like, I feel like if you're gonna strip people of their rights, at least be willing to admit that that's what you're doing.
Well, but then it wouldn't work. You know what I'm saying? It's all about making it work. I think what's important here is to show or to look at how litigation is an eternal process. There's always loopholes to get around. There's always loopholes to be created. And there's always some type of slick way to get away with things. And as you pointed out, just how all the chief justices got onto the court while Trump was in office. What people need to keep in mind is as polarity in this country continues to skyrocket and stay, Congress and the Senate are going to become less and less able to do much of anything at all, which is why there's been so much of a focus on the courts, not just the Supreme Court, but just the federal court system in general. Biden actually has installed a lot of people in federal court seats. And yeah. So this battle is going to continue to go. And so this is what we really need to pay attention to. And this is why we need to pay attention to local politics, municipalities, where police laws and regulations actually get controlled. And you talk about how the Supreme Court's playing dumb. You go down to a smaller level, police get away with killing people because they're all part of the same ticket. They're, you know, all the prosecutors and the defendants and the judges and the police chiefs, they all are in the same friend group basically, and they look out for one another. And so something as arbitrary as you pointed out at the beginning, you being able to sue someone for $10,000, if they even drove someone to an abortion appointment. And yep. So again, this is completely arbitrary. There's absolutely no arguing it. However, you know, we're moving further away from litigation in Congress and the Senate and more to you know, courts deciding final outcomes and keeping cases going for years, for decades. So
No, you're not wrong. And you're right. Biden is putting in judges, but so far he hasn't had a spot on the Supreme Court. We don't know if Breyer is going to retire. This is how it works. Trump gets 4 years, he gets three justices. Biden gets 4 years, maybe he gets none. That's sort of the way it works. And I'm gonna go off a little bit on what I was talking about yesterday. I'm mad, as I think a lot of people should be, but I think that you really have to make sure that you're mad at everyone who deserves it. I'm obviously mad at Donald Trump for putting these justices on there. I'm mad at them for lying about what they would do when they got on the court. But I'm also mad at the people that helped them along the way. So people like Susan Collins, who pretended that Kavanaugh was something that he wasn't. But also people like Dianne Feinstein. So I was reminded by Scott Hechinger on Twitter, when Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation hearing ended, Dianne Feinstein hugged Lindsey Graham and said the hearing was one of the best she'd been involved in. Like a week before the election, Amy Coney Barrett sat there and refused to answer any questions, got onto the court anyway, even though the Republicans had said that that sort of thing wasn't acceptable, and Dianne Feinstein was hugging Lindsey Graham. So there's a lot of people that are responsible for this, and also responsible for doing something about it, because as we said yesterday, this is not an unsolvable problem. When we talk about reforming the Supreme Court, some people talk about that as breaking the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court is broken. And to make that really clear, what we have right now is a supermajority of conservatives on the Supreme Court. They're put there by presidents. Do you remember the last time a Republican president actually won an election with the support of the people, the popular vote? If you went back to that time, you'd have to wait half a decade before the MCU started. It is so long ago. And despite their complete, what's that?
Reagan, the last Republican.
Well, Bush in 2004 was able to, not in 2000, but in 2004, way back in 2004. And yet they have a supermajority. They cannot get the people to support them, but the system is set up in a way that they can still have overwhelming power. So what are you gonna do? Are you just gonna like leave that there? Say, I guess there's nothing we can do for the next 50 years? There is something we can do. There's something the Democrats in the Senate can do. There's certainly stuff that Biden can do. They're choosing not to act. They are surrendering in the face of a system that is fundamentally broken, that cannot deliver to the people who actually have the majority.
I think that they don't really view it as their fight. In such a way that I think it's such a big task and such a big undertaking. There's something in a subconscious layer that's like, this is the next generation's fight. This isn't really what I came here to do. Ugh. I came here to stabilize Obamacare. I came here to, you know, maybe add a little bit of more regulations to the system that I know and that I'm familiar with. And so, but again, the unfortunate problem with that is all these giant little literal possible extinction level problems that we're facing are just left on the back burner for us when we're 50. You know what I'm saying? Like we're in our late 20s, early mid 30s now, and we won't really be able to get to it until we're 50 and 60 and can get the reins. So, yeah.
Yeah, look, based on how they're acting, I feel like you're right, but they're dead wrong. It's not next generations. Like there's not gonna be a next generation if they don't fight now. And by the way, look, I'm jumping to like, you know, expanding the Supreme Court or getting rid of the filibuster and actually passing laws, but you don't need to go that far. There's some great suggestions online. Ellie Mistel, friend of the show, says Biden should hire doctors under federal authority. They could be paid for privately to get around the Hyde Amendment and should send them to Texas to make sure that women can actually exercise their rights. I would also send them to a bunch of other states where effectively Roe v. Wade has been dead for some time. Adrienne Lawrence said, she's wondering if, as commander in chief of the military, Biden could order military doctors in Texas to perform abortions for civilians on military bases. She doesn't know for sure if that's possible, and she is the expert, but he could look into that. There are certainly things that could be done, even short of expanding the court. And so when Biden sends out a press release saying, we're going to fight for your rights, I can't help but see earlier today their fight to continue the federal eviction moratorium. They decided they're not going to do that anymore. They said when the Supreme Court knocked it down that they would, and they just gave up. So now they're saying they'll fight for women's abortion rights. Well, are they gonna give up in a week? When they do, will there even be a news cycle about it?
Right, hopefully a new news cycle goes over so people forget. I mean, it has to be that they're succumbing to some type of pressure, because it's not as if the entire country and especially certain regions of the nation aren't constantly crying out. It's not as if there aren't politically active organizations on the ground all over the country. You know, it's just who has the higher leverage, and they're just choking.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, well, unfortunately, we are running out of hours, so we're gonna have to jump into our next story. Still more news to come, so let's jump into this. We've been wondering for some time, will there be any consequences for the killing of Elijah McClain? And now we find out that the police officers and the paramedics have been indicted by a grand jury. Elijah McClain, of course, is a black man who was put in a chokehold and injected with a powerful sedative 2 years ago in suburban Denver. The five defendants involved in his death will each face one charge of manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide, as well as a variety of assault charges. Which, look, I don't know if you remember the details, we're gonna give you the details, seems very reasonable. So basically, the indictment was unsealed just yesterday, and it accuses the paramedics of failing to follow medical protocols before and after they injected Mr. McClain with ketamine. Mr. McClain was already handcuffed when the medics arrived on the scene, and the indictment says they didn't talk to him, they didn't check his vital signs or properly monitor him after giving him a powerful drug. And so, in short, effectively, he was walking home from a convenience store. He had a bag of cans of iced tea, was listening to music, he's wearing a mask, and cops ran up on him and began hassling him. He tried to talk to them, to reason with them. By the way, I saw again his last words. "I can't breathe. I have my ID right here. My name is Elijah McClain. That's my house. I was just going home. I'm an introvert. I'm just different. That's all. I'm so sorry. I have no gun. I don't do that stuff. I don't do any fighting. Why are you attacking me?" And yet they did. And then even once the paramedics came, they decided to sedate him, and he died as a result of that. All these people that we're supposed to be able to depend on, that are supposed to be responsible, we give them the literal power of life and death, and they did not care at all about Elijah McClain. Jackson, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are is that just in general, this is, and again, the luckily, now I had an encounter with the police and they were cool, but the security guard really wanted them on me. Mm-hmm. And so just in general, the attitude that police are there to keep a certain people in place, to keep a certain people with the idea that they have to stay in line. This even goes back to our previous discussion about the abortion laws. The right-wing conservative mindset in general is that without strict authority on people's sense of freedom, there can only be chaos, and therefore they must be in that place. I mean, so much to the point where you're choking and sedating a child, you have all these adults and these grown men on this child because there's a deep pervasive belief that that's necessary in order to keep the order. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's really my thoughts on it. And again, this goes back to if we want change, we got to get to the municipalities, we got to get to the local politics, because if we don't do that, then this will not change.
Exactly. Yeah. And there has to be accountability. Thankfully, there will be charges in this case. But the knee jerk cliched response is it's just bad apples. So who? Both the cops and the paramedics, I guess, were just bad apples too, because they didn't care. And then three other officers were fired, and one resigned last year over photos mimicking the chokehold that was used on Elijah McClain. So just the people that work with him, I guess, are bad apples too.
The culture, the attitude, and who it attracts.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Who it attracts and what influence it has on people who go into that system to conform. To be okay with that sort of thing. Yeah, and we can see the effect. Thankfully, look, I guess there will be some consequences, but Elijah McClain is dead, as so many people are. Anyway, okay. It's been a rough hour of the news. We do have theoretically sort of lighter stories that are coming up after this. So if you've been watching on our linear platforms, thank you so much for watching. This is where we say goodbye to you. But if you're watching on Twitch and YouTube, we have a lot more news coming up. We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back after this. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.